You're listening to Unrooted. I'm your host, Julie Hotz. First, I wanted to mention that if you haven't given this show a review or rating, it can really help the show get noticed. So I'd love it if you took a moment to give the show a quick review and or rating. Thanks in advance. Also, if this is your first time tuning in, I recommend starting with episode 1. Each episode does stand alone, but this first season is serialized. Now, on to the show. When I was a kid, I thought moving sounded so cool. Cool in the way that braces or getting your first period seemed. But the truth is, that stuff gets old. Getting food stuck in your braces every time you eat gets old. And staining your underwear every single month gets old. When it comes to moving, seeing new places and being in new spaces doesn't get old for me. But packing, unpacking, forwarding your mail, updating addresses, changing your driver's license, finding a new doctor, letting everyone know you've moved, or even remembering to let anyone know, those things get old real fast. Maybe it was because I lived in the same house from birth to age 18 that moving sounded so glamorous. I hadn't thought about or experienced the painful parts of moving. I'd only fantasized about the daydreamy parts, the parts that weren't related to homesickness, apartment hunting, leaving friends behind, tragedy, bittersweet opportunity, or just how completely annoying the process can be. Little Julie thought, maybe if we moved, we'd move into a brand new house. Maybe a house that would be 2 stories tall. Maybe I could pick out the paint color of my bedroom. There was the possibility of new friends, seeing new places, and telling people that my address had changed, that I now lived on a street that had the coolest name. I remember when my childhood friend Bonnie Burke moved. I was really sad to see her leave. I mean, we had made up a language together. I knew we could become pen pals and that she would visit from time to time. But really, I was kind of jealous of her. She was moving to New Jersey. I had never even been to New Jersey. What an adventure. Maybe she was gonna get to move into a 2-story house. And maybe she'd make new friends and do all the daydreamy things one does when they move into their new address life. Bonnie moved, and she did come back to visit. But after a while, time and life happened. And soon, we didn't know anything about each other's lives. Then, this is the only time you'll ever hear me say this. Thank God for Facebook. We reconnected as adults, became close again, even though we lived in different parts of the country. She is one of the friends that hiked to the home of my heart with me when I went back for the second time. I consider her to be one of my best friends, again. Recently, I caught up with her in her current hometown of Austin, Texas. So I decided to get her take on moving. On that move that a few decades ago I thought was so glamorous. I talked to her as we stood outside on the streets of downtown Austin. Here's Bonnie.
I definitely felt like it was an adventure. And I remember being in the car and driving up and feeling like, this is like part of my dramatic story, you know, like I'm going to miss my friends, and but I'm going to get make new friends and have this new life. And I was listening to Michael W. Smith, Friends Are Friends Forever, on a Walkman in the back of an Astro van.
I remember that Astro van.
On the bench, on the back, and I was laying down, and I was like, I think I should probably cry. And I started crying, but like on some kind of cue where I felt like it was part of my movie, like it was part of my Babysitter's Club story or like American Girl story or something that like I had read. And I just felt like this was like the moment in your life where like things change and like it's going to be really exciting. But having never moved that far before, I think that I, you know, like when you're a kid, you don't really understand like long-term consequences. Like it is going to be really hard to see your friends again, and you aren't probably ever going to move back, and it isn't just like a fun adventure for... It's not like a fun adventure that reads like a story or watches like a movie or a TV show. It's like, it's your life and you can be really lonely. And I think I was really lonely for a long time when I first moved to New Jersey, especially since I had been really sheltered in Texas. And then I go and I get put in a public school, and then I'm homeschooled, and then I'm put in a private school, and then I'm back in a public school. And it was just... like a lot of kind of disruption that followed the disruption of moving that made it really hard for me to like make really good friends.
Okay, so maybe Bonnie's move was kind of cool and poignant, but it was mixed with a lot more than young Julie imagined. I'd forgotten to imagine the lonely parts. One reason I think Bonnie and I reconnected so swiftly as adults is that both of us are curious, independent, and adventurous. We're okay with braving some discomfort to see what's on the other side. I wondered if, as a child, that part of her personality was there, making her move a little bit easier.
I think I was like that from, yeah. I think that that's part of my DNA. And also being kind of a loner is like part of me too. Like I don't mind traveling alone or packing up and moving somewhere new alone. I've done that since that move when I was 12, too. I guess I've always kind of looked at it as an adventure, and sometimes it feels like a fresh start, you know, too. I think that that move, it wasn't as hard for me, I don't think, because of my nature, which is to wander. And I also think that that move made me more of a wanderer, probably, too. Because, yeah, it was hard, but I also really learned to be okay with myself, you know, and to be, like, alone. And that's actually something I'm fighting a little bit now. Like, I need to bring people into my life and keep them there, you know? And from moving so much as a kid and, like, not necessarily geographically, but being placed in and out of different schools, it made me, like, too okay with being alone, you know? I don't know if that's possible, but whatever. The soil was already rich of me, like, kind of wanting to be by myself, and then, like, moving a lot kind of just, like, fostered that more. And so...
like a compost pile with worms.
Yeah. One worm. Me. We need more worms in our lives, Julie. You're my worm.
Oh, you're my worm.
Yes.
Not all moves are the same. Some moves are what dreams are made of. Others are heartbreakers. I think most moves are probably a mixed bag. My move from LA to New York City fell in the realm of mid-level logistically annoying and emotionally heartbreaking. It was my choice to move, but it felt like a pressure-cooked choice. If you remember, I'd fallen in love. But the person I'd fallen in love with, Miguel, who you'll hear from later this season, was in LA for a year-long fellowship. So he'd been applying for jobs as the fellowship was coming to a close. He'd applied to places near and far, because that's a pretty normal way to look for jobs. And New York City does have a lot of opportunities. And of course, that's where the best job offer came through. In the prospecting stage, moving had sounded fun and exciting to me. But then I found out it was New York City. And it was actually a thing that was happening. And my heart sunk like a little anchor in the ocean. And financially, it was not the best time in my life to move cross-country. I was in the midst of a perfect financial storm. My imposter complex was at an all-time high, and my anxiety was really flaring up. This was not my best moment. On top of that, I was leaving the entire West Coast behind and saying goodbye to many of my best friends. And I was starting to fall into a pit of depression. In the month leading up to leaving LA, I was on an emotional roller coaster. Miguel was already in New York City because his job had started almost immediately after he'd accepted. In fact, I'd already driven cross-country once to help him move, and I was looking at another cross-country drive to get myself there. So there I was in LA with a pile of boxes. All day long, I was stuck in my head, oscillating between freaking out and just trying to pack up my life. My poor roommates watched me shuffle about the apartment as I forgot to take showers and just tried to keep it together. Some days were straightforward. It was organized and pack, pack, pack. Other days, I made the mistake of looking up the weather in New York City. It was wintertime.
Right now, it is 18 degrees in New York City, but I'm in Los Angeles, and it is 70. I'm not afraid of all of the cold weather. I've never lived in the north. I'm much less afraid of the cold than I am the heat. And it's fair to say that because I grew up in Texas, and it gets so hot in the summer. But, I mean, just looking outside right now and how nice it is, makes me feel crazy for packing up and moving to New York. I've already cried twice today about moving to New York. I'm afraid that I might hate it.
Then there were the moments when I quietly sobbed in the garage.
Oh, man. I really don't want to move. When I thought into the future about moving away from LA, I always thought, oh, it's because I'm going to go to a place that's a little bit more affordable, maybe a little more space, or closer to green spaces. But this is the exact opposite, and I'm not going to lie. I'm having a really hard time. Can be fine and exciting. I'm just like, who wants to live in New York? Like, who actually wants to live in New York? Who actually likes it?
As you might remember, when I talked with my sister Jenna in the first episode, I told her about how, in this period, I'd been struggling with the concept of home.
And maybe because I have asked some hard questions about, like, what is more valid, to be with the person I love or the place I love.
My last Saturday in LA, I rode my bike to the beach with my friend Ji Young. We ate fruit that she'd bought at the market. I dipped my toes in the ocean and generally felt nostalgic. It was not a rare occurrence for me to bike to the beach, but I found myself standing there thinking, why didn't I bike to the beach more often? And why didn't I hang out with my friends more often? Too late now. My friend Rhea and my friend Hannah and her little boy came by, and we all sat in the sand and talked.
Bubbles. The bubbles?
Bubbles.
What letter do you think bubbles starts with?
B.
Yeah.
Ooh. Very good.
You like this game. What letter do you think bike starts with? Yeah.
Ooh.
What letter do you think ocean starts with?
Ocean.
Then there were the goodbyes.
Bye stick.
Bye stick. Are you
going to
say bye to the sand too?
Bye sand and rabbit.
Oh, thank you for coming out.
Yeah, of course. It's so nice to be at the beach. I haven't been in for so long.
At this point, you're probably wondering, if I was so sad, why was I going to follow someone all the way to New York City? If my whole life was stitched into the West Coast, why was I bringing a giant seam ripper into the whole equation? There was another element I haven't told you about yet. I'd fallen into a funk. I could feel that complacency was creeping into my life in so many areas. Sure, I'd found a great romantic relationship, but being in a relationship doesn't solve all the problems in the rest of your life. I'd gotten comfortable and anxious at the same time. It felt like I'd laid down on a broken bed that felt nice, but wasn't good for my back. New York City felt like it would be a catalyst. It would force me outside my comfort zone. And if long-distance hiking has taught me anything, it's that sitting with and leaning into discomfort is where the magic happens. As much as it pained me to leave LA, I realized it might be good for me. Maybe New York City wasn't the ideal shakeup, but it was something. I am by no means suggesting running away from your problems. In this case, a move seemed proactive. It strangely and painfully felt right. Let's go back to my conversation with Bonnie. Bonnie moved to New York City when she was 23 years old and lived there for 5 years. Then she moved to Austin, Texas. Here she is, talking about those moves.
My best move was probably... Oh man, that's a hard question because I feel like when I moved to New York, that was like a really strong, scary move. I didn't have a job. I didn't know anybody. The world was my oyster, and I was ready. And I had been wanting to live in New York like since the time I saw like Miracle on 34th Street, I think, when I was little. And so that was a great move because, I mean, I grew up a lot. And then when I moved to Austin, that was a really good move too because I felt like in New York, I was kind of doing the same things and expecting just different results, and I needed a change. I just needed to be like zapped into a different lifestyle. And I know I could have done that myself with some hard work in New York, but I was tired of living in New York. And when I moved here, I started dating a lot more, and I felt like a lot of opportunities were opened up more than in New York. And that's what it is sometimes. It's a catalyst. Sometimes, I don't know. I don't know how other people grow and stay in the same place for... I mean, I know it's possible, but I think I need a change of location sometimes. Like, location is such a part of my... Like, my surroundings are so... I'm, like, sewn to them, you know? So it... In New York, I literally needed to like rip that out of me to grow. That's really how I felt, that I needed to leave.
Moves happen for so many reasons. But I'd heard something similar from my good friend Paul.
Hey, friend. Why are you in the dark?
Because I sit in a closet to record this podcast. Okay.
So I assume you're doing okay life-wise before we talk about the podcast.
I met Paul in Tallahassee, Florida in 2005. We had both just moved there for grad school. We were in the same grad program, studying film production. I was fresh out of undergrad. I'd moved straight to Florida from my home state.
Hi, I'm Paul Sitachit, and I'm a filmmaker out of Los Angeles.
When I was thinking about somebody to talk to about moving, you came to mind. You've done some really big logistical moves. Since you moved to Australia.
Paul was not fresh out of undergrad when he moved to Florida. He was 10 years older than me and had lived in LA years ago. He'd moved to Australia for work in 2001, then moved to Tallahassee in 2005 to go back to school, to switch careers. Finally, he'd completed the round trip by moving back to LA after grad school. So Paul seemed like a great person to talk to about big moves and about home.
I guess... Home for me is basically where I feel... What's the best way to phrase this? I think what I've always found is that home is actually wherever I am. And I know that sounds like a glib answer, but I come from a family that had moved around a bit during my childhood. I was born in Glendale. We moved to Thailand for 2 years, where my brother was born. Then we moved to Rockville, Maryland, until basically beginning of middle school, then to San Francisco, and then to Los Angeles again for high school. So in that childhood place, I never was able to get what, say, someone like my wife.
Paul is talking about his wife, Barrington, who also goes by B.
I never was able to get what, say, someone like my wife did, which was have a contiguous childhood in one place. So I've always learned or grew up like deciding that home was where I was. And so I've never been bound to a certain place. Usually it's where I just decide to sleep, which sounds pretty lonely, I suppose, now that I say it out loud. I guess I always viewed myself as a bit of a snail, where my home is where I am, and I'm a little slow and slimy. Not emotionally or personality-wise, but I'm just, you know, I'm a snail. That's probably the better answer.
Paul explains why home is less location-dependent to him and more about people.
When I was a kid, when my brother was born, actually, I was three, my mom went and had my brother in the delivery room in Thailand. And at the time, like, I don't know where my dad was exactly, but my aunts and uncles had brought me to the hospital. And when they carted my mom away, I had this huge fear that they were going to take her away forever. And I freaked out. So I ran throughout the hospital trying to find my mom. They finally caught up to me. And then next thing I knew, I was being dragged to the parking lot. And I actually don't remember any of this until this very moment. An aunt had put her hand next to my mouth, and I bit it. I bit it as hard as I could. Like imagine all your cells like aligning to achieve one purpose, because she's taking me away from my mom. And the next thing I knew, I was just thrown in the back seat, crying myself to whatever. And that was my first memory. And so I come to realize after a lot of thought, like, you know, years past, that I had made two pretty radical decisions at that age, at the age of three. And like we all do, we make these decisions when we're completely ill-prepared to make these decisions. And one of those decisions was, no matter what you do, sometimes, you know, even if you want something purely and truly, the answer is no. And the other thing is, like, everyone is going to leave you. I know, and we all learned that. I mean, like, not everyone learns that at three, but we all learned that. And the fact that I was also Thai American and my family was mostly in Thailand, like my extended family. So it was just me, my mom, my dad, and my brother. Like, I've always learned or just assumed that it was just going to be me. And the fact that I had to make the most of the relationships that I had with people, because at any point, they could go away. So in that regard, I think what had happened in my development, like, you know, being an immigrant, I was actually born here, but like being an immigrant and having that warped sense of time where there's a countdown for all relationships, it really made me not really consider the permanence of my surroundings and more on the beauty of every relationship I had. So come basically 2000, I was an engineer for this company. I was living in LA. I was single. And for all of it, I was just very sick of me. Not in some like, oh, you gotta stop drinking or doing cocaine kind of way. But just that way of like, oh, is this all that you are, Paul? Is this all that you really, you know, are you just going to grind it out for the rest of your life as you live in this trafficy place and you go swing dancing every night or every other night and go to work? And it just seemed like I wanted to be a little more than what I was currently in LA. And I had traveled a little bit. I went to Kenya and Sweden one year. And what I came to realize was that when I'm traveling, I'm actually a better Paul. I'm a better version of me when I don't have the support system of wherever I'm at. And so in that vein, I decided, you know, I should probably find some job abroad that would make me a better me. And so I looked through my engineering firm and they had openings in Australia. And there you go. I applied and I got the job. I was headed off to Australia in April 2001. That was, you know, that was a time frame. And it was, at this point, it was like December-ish 2000. And, you know, interestingly enough, I was going, well, now that I am going to go to Australia, I should find myself a short-term relationship. And so I started dating this woman, and, you know, it was December, and 4 months later, I was married to her. So, you know, that was interesting. And, you know, and we've been married, we'll be 18 years in April. And I suppose you could say that she is where my heart and home is. It's like I got like a double wide snail shell, and now we are snailing together through life in a way. That's not the most pretty analogy, but it seems pretty apt. I think we both were in a place where we were just sick of ourselves and sick of LA. I wouldn't even blame LA. I wouldn't say that we were actually sick of Los Angeles. I think we were just wanting a change for ourselves. And so with that, we were able to just pack up and go. And the fact that we were leaving our infrastructure, our friends and our family, was sort of irrelevant because we were creating our own infrastructure between ourselves. So having this new marriage and pretty new relationship, really, because like literally 4 months is when it was our courtship. We just went for it. We just had this adventure together in Australia. And for the longest time, like, you know, Australia was, you know, we lived there for 4 years. And there's a saying in Australia, or a song, and the chorus goes, "No matter how far or how wide I roam, I still call Australia home." And, you know, and truthfully, like, you know, there's a part of me that does feel that way, that Australia is very familiar and home-like to me. LA to Australia was actually a very easy move. And that was because I worked for a company that would move everything for me. And the fact that I lived in a house in a one bedroom and I slept on basically I slept on a piece of wood. So there was just my clothes and I didn't even have a computer back then. So for me, it was pretty easy. I could fit my life in a shopping cart, basically. And I was an engineer. I was just stupid. And, you know, and that just goes to show how much my wife could see, you know, wasn't materialistic, because looking at me, I was not prime marriage material.
Or maybe Paul was smart. Stuff can be a burden. How much easier is it to move when you're almost completely unencumbered?
The harder thing was actually moving from Australia to Tallahassee, because now we had 4 years, we had built a home in Australia, and then I had the midlife crisis, and I go like, oh, well, I need to be a filmmaker because my voice needs to be heard. And so I'm going to go to Florida to like learn how to say stuff, I guess, whatever that was. But my wife was already in Florida. She was prepping the house on our end, and I had to basically pack everything and sell everything. So it was just a logistical burden. You know, I mean, I am a person that would truly just be equally as happy just setting everything on fire and then going the place. Anyway, there is, I suppose I'm, for an old person, I do have this millennial style perspective that I'm going to live forever and that my memory is going to be perfectly intact. And as I get old, I'll still be the same way I am, and I won't need photos or memorabilia. And I think that's, you know, that's erroneous. But, you know, I still haven't got to that emotional place where I'm sentimental over things, per se.
But was there anything Paul was sad to leave behind? besides people?
You know, when I think about Australia, I think the thing I most am sad about leaving Australia, or actually this applies to any place I've left, the thing that I am most sad is not even the right word. It's like some between sad and nostalgic. I don't know what word that is, but it's the person that I was. It's rarely ever things or even people, because people come in and out. But I think in Australia, I was a different type of person. In LA before Australia, I was a different type of person. And even the person that I was in Florida to LA, I was a different type of person. Like, I think ultimately, as we all get older, that person that we were has serviced us and got us through, you know, the things that we needed to get through. And, you know, it's pretty sad / nostalgic to see that that person is gone. Not to say that the person that I am is worse. It's just that as time goes on, you know, you have to say goodbye to a lot of things, whether it be places or people. And I think you should treat yourself with that same kind of honor. Whenever I go to, like, move to a new place, I'm very excited to see the person that I will become, to meet that person. My brother, is a different type of person. His life was fairly chaotic in his youth. I can tell that he has always really searched for this sense of home, this sense of stability that I was never able to provide him, that my parents, for all their attempts, could not provide him. And truthfully, it did not really happen for him until he got married and established a home for himself. Like, I have never seen him so happy as he is married now with his wife. And you could see that, like, you know, he's really achieving something that I took for granted, I suppose, that sense of stability. In some ways, that's what home is, right? That concept of home is that internal rock that you wind up leaning on when things get rough. And he didn't really have that because of various things. And now he does. And I'm so happy for him. And he will probably be one of those people who will, you know, buy a barbecue and a ping pong table for his backyard and just be, oh my God, let's watch the game and let's grill some meat and blah, blah, blah. And his kids will probably be the type of people like me, like their Uncle Paul, who go like, oh, home is where I am. I'm going to go to like Uzbekistan or something. It's kind of like this like circle of life kind of thing, I think. I think people who have really stable childhoods wind up looking for instability, and those who have unstable childhood look for stability. It's a vicious cycle. Terrible. So terrible.
This sounds familiar. I am a product of childhood stability. And so now I question stability and rootedness more than I search for it.
My parents did a very good job of showing me that they loved me. But more than that, more than anything, and I don't know if they had planned this or it just came about, what they were able to show me was that I was deserving of love. And because of that, I've never had to really try to find that hole, to fill that hole in my heart. I've never had that feeling of like this insecurity about where I was, and because of the home that they had provided. You know, like, I didn't have an older brother to, like, you know, pick at my self-esteem. So in that way, you know, they were able to give me the necessary tools to create an internal framework that really serviced me in my adult life.
Now, what about Paul's most recent move from Tallahassee to Los Angeles?
The most interesting move for me in my life was moving from my home in Tallahassee back to Los Angeles, which was both home for Barrington and myself years ago. And what was very interesting was this was the first time that Barrington and I had to really move together, because LA to Australia, we had the moving company, and you just throw a whole bunch of money at that, and it's not our money, so that's fine. Second, Australia to Tallahassee. Like, B's already in Tallahassee, and I'm setting it up. But from Tallahassee to Los Angeles, you know, here we are, graduate students, a house full of, like, junk, and working together to move this household of stuff. And she and I are very different people when it comes to packing, and because she's a person who would like to organize and pack at the same time, and I'm more of a put everything in one box and we'll sort it at the other end. And by sorting at the other end, just put it in the garage and never look at it again.
For the record, I am on Team Barrington here. I try to pack and organize at the same time, and I cry as often as I can.
So with that, it was a real challenge. Like, there are a lot of tears as we wound up fighting over what we need to do to put, do we need to put this piece of paper into this box? Like, we're crying about this. That's not helpful. We got to get out of this house in, like, you know, 2 days, you know? And it's just, it was very interesting to see that interaction, that how not well we work together in that regard. I think because for all how I see home, Barrington sees home differently. And I don't think at that point in our relationship, we truly gave each other the space to have that definition of home for both of us, you know. Does that make sense? It's a sense of to try to meld what she feels like what makes a home versus what I feel like makes a home. And I don't think internally we gave each other that space. So that was a challenge. And then we had to drive, you know, 5 days, like, through the South to California. We just took the 10, you know, which is fun. But, you know, I wouldn't do it again in a truck. You know, it's not, I love road trips. I drove from Tallahassee to Anchorage, Alaska in 5 days. So, but, like, in a truck, you know, it just wasn't that fun. I don't remember it as fun. It's not like we sang, like, 99 bottles of beer or 900,000 bottles of beer. So, you know.
Paul and Bea have been in the same upper duplex apartment since moving back to LA. They try to be very good tenants because they don't want to have to move. They've got a great spot at a great price. I ask Paul about the future, about what he thinks about when the thought of moving crosses his mind.
So right now we live way beyond our means, not financially. Like, we pay within our means financially, but we have a really good deal on our apartment in LA. It's bigger than the money would suggest. And if we had to move out of this place, the sheer act of contraction could literally cause a nuclear explosion. You know, just to contract all the stuff that we have into the size of the apartment that we could afford. We have a lot of couches, basically have a refuge for people's old couches. And to get rid of any one of them would really, like, break my heart. And that would be, maybe that's what home is. Home is a couch for me. Who knows? Thank you, Julie. Thank you. I now see the truth of the situation. It's a couch. Truthfully, once again, light the whole thing on fire and just move to another place. That has always been my philosophy, you know, because at our core, home is where the heart is.
Home is where your heart is.
Home is where the heart is.
Okay, we get it. Home is where the heart is. I love pros and cons lists. So I asked Paul to tell me something he loves and hates about each place he's lived in as an adult.
For LA, things that I love in LA, I love the sunshine. Things that I hate, traffic, and yeah, traffic. Australia, things that I love was the sunshine. Things that I hate about Australia. That's interesting. The sunshine. I lived in the middle of Australia. It was all sunshine. It was a desert. I lived in a desert. So that's a plus or minus thing. Tallahassee. Things that I liked about Tallahassee. Small town feel. I love that it was just one big village, effectively. Things I hate about Tallahassee. The Spanish moss. The Spanish moss is this green moss that grows on all the trees. And it makes every day look like Friday the 13th. It looks like you could be killed. You're in a slasher movie, and at any point, you could die.
That was my favorite thing about Tallahassee, probably the Spanish moss.
Yes, you know, you have a very different worldview than I do.
Do you have a favorite place out of the three?
I don't have any favorites. Australia. And I choose to live in LA because it's comfortable. What it makes me feel is inconvenienced, you know, that I would have to leave this place. But at some point, it can easily be where I will just be sick of L.A. Paul. And maybe, like, L.A. Paul would need to transition to, I don't know, Tulsa Paul for all. I don't know. It won't be Tulsa. But, like, you know, maybe London Paul, Venice, Florence Paul. Oh, that sounds sexy. Florence Paul. I have no idea. Truthfully, if I won the lottery, I would have no problem leaving this place. I would just get a bigger place and or a smaller place or a nicer place or something place. You know, maybe recently I've been looking at these like $90,000 mobile homes that, you know, just because like, oh, wouldn't it be fun to like drive around America in this home as this Asian guy through the red states? And that's a different feeling. I would wear my John Deere hat. You know, oh, he wears the John Deere hat. He's salt of the earth.
There's something else I haven't mentioned yet. It's another reason I asked Paul about moving. And that is, when I came back to LA after long distance hiking and cycling for almost half a year in 2015, I became Paul and B's housemate and lived there from 2015 till I moved to New York City. Moving isn't just about the people moving. It's also about the people we leave behind. Paul and I had been classmates in grad school, but we weren't so much friends at that time. When I moved to LA, we slowly became great friends. In Paul's own words, he's an acquired taste. When I became Paul and B's housemate, Paul became one of my best friends, my big brother, and my sometimes life coach. So I had to ask him, how did he feel when I told him I was moving?
You know, it was one of those things where we have an extra room and we have roommates. And B and I actually are people who really enjoy having a third person in our house because I talk a lot and she cannot deal with me talking at her all the time. And so when you were in the house, we knew that you were a great fit because you would listen to me rant, and that was great. And we also knew that there was going to be a time where you would leave us. And it was really hard for me. And it's hard for me because, you know, like, blah, 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 your family, blah, 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 to see you go would be terrible, and like finding a person to replace you would be impossible, and logistically we want rent, but like ultimately would I be ready for you to go when you went? And in this particular case, I was not. When you told me that you were leaving with the cupcakes, I was not ready to have you go.
Paul and B could see my move coming from a mile away, but neither one of them could predict its exact time frame. And neither could I until it was upon me. But Paul, way in advance, had requested that when I gave my I'm going to move out notice, that I place a cupcake on his desk. You know, to soften the blow.
The way I saw it was like, it wasn't that you were leaving my life and we would never see each other again and our relationship wouldn't change and grow and blah, blah. That was not the case. The case was basically, I was not ready. And then, you know, you inflicting your move on me in that devastating cupcake. I'm going to move cupcake, you know. I knew it was going to come. But I feel like for all of it, I've watched you grow as a person. And, you know, we've become dear friends over the last decade. I suppose, and I hate to say it this way because it sounds really, really cheesy and stupid and probably slightly condescending. But I was like, oh, she's all grown up now. And this is what, you know, parents must feel when their kids leave, you know, and they're never ready. They're never ready. I'm never ready. I'll never be ready. I mean, it was that kind of thing where I was just unprepared for that moment. And in some ways, it would have been better for me if you one day came home and goes, hey, guys, I need to move out. I'm moving to New York. And my response would have been more like, okay, that's what's happening. But kind of like the slow glacial seeing of it happening and just like the dread of you leaving, you know, I imagine that's what parents must have. Like, you know, oh, the kid's 17 now. They're going to go to college. It's going to happen. It's going to poison every single moment of their, you know, basically every single moment when they realize their kids are going to leave. Like, it just taints their experience with a slight bit of sadness. Oh, I can only drink so much of this youth before it's gone, you know. So sad. I know. Anyway, that's how I felt. I always say this, like, you know, all sunshine makes a desert. And I lived in Australia, so I know that's the truth. When I saw you packing, it actually was pretty easy for me. Because you are a terribly slow packer. So it really didn't clump into like the last week where you go, oh, I got everything. And so fortunately, like, you know, there are some people who would pack and things would just disappear. And, you know, you could see that for you, like you had your mess. And then 4 days later, the mess was gone and you were gone. And so it was like a Band-Aid being ripped off.
The beauty of not having much stuff is that you can probably fit your life into a little trailer. By the end of the month, I had almost everything packed up. And the day before I was set to drive off to New York City, I picked up a little U-Haul trailer that I would tow all the way to the other side of the country with my Subaru.
It's moving day. I'm here at the U-Haul storage and truck rental place. And I really like that their tow inspection seems to be basically what I could do. Hopefully my common sense combined with their common sense means that everything will be okay.
That's not going to be good. Yeah, well, I have to get a longer version.
Can it maybe, can it go in through this thing?
Yes.
And it only has to go in a little bit?
It just goes to the one.
One? Okay.
The first link there. So these will be your spares in case you need to change it, okay, for whatever reason.
Mm-hmm. What's this little guy?
That's going to go right in here to keep this from falling off.
Just rented my U-Haul trailer. Now it's time to go load. That trailer looks really small from the outside, but it does look bigger on the inside, so I'm hopeful.
Unfortunately, I rented a trailer that was too small. But Paul, being the engineer he still is at heart, helped me Tetris pack the car and get as much as I could into that trailer in my Subaru.
Do you want to put that lamp in or no?
Sure, if you see a good space for it. Absolutely.
Now, these lamps are taking a lot of space, so is there any more stuff?
I just have my computer. Oh. Everyone's playing Tetris.
And then the moment came to leave, early in the morning. Paul was up to help me with the last few things and to say goodbye.
These are those last little things in the life.
In a typical LA fashion, there were sounds of a helicopter whirring in the distance, even though it was who knows how early in the morning.
Ethan, you see your mirror. Remember, you have a trailer, so.
What?
Remember, you have a trailer, so it's going to be kind of big.
And then I can put that right where this box is. Oh my god.
Why'd you do that?
Because I was thinking about mailing.
Paul took a photograph of me in my overstuffed car. Overstuffed is an understatement. I don't think I've ever seen a car so stuffed in my life.
Yeah, that's perfect.
Oh my gosh, this
this photo of me. I the pants really help. Yeah. Heads to the crazy. And my crazy eyes. And I've got this photo in the show notes. It's worth checking out if you'd like to see a photo of a wide-eyed person wearing crazy pants about to drive off into uncertainty.
Okay, my friend, I think you have it. You have a charger for your... way to charge your phone?
I do.
Okay. Well, I think this is it.
Bye, Paul. I'll see you soon.
Please let me know when you get into Dallas. Enough for that. You know, check in.
Well, you know, it was one of those, what was it, 2 in the morning, 4 in the morning, X in the morning. And as you were driving off in your trailer and your car, there was 2 thoughts in my head. My thought was, I hope she doesn't get into an accident because that car is packed pretty tight. And fortunately, if she does, though, it's packed so tight that, like, she won't be able to get too hurt because, you know, it's like a egg carton. But secondly, I go like, you know what? I really wish someone would be filming me right now because this is one of those cinematic moments that, you know, that just isn't being recorded.
Wrong, Paul. Wrong. Well, there might not have been a camera, but I was recording this and I saw you standing there in the middle of the road.
It's only in my head where, like, you know, here is the noble big brother watching the little sister leave in the dead of night, all by himself in the middle of the road. And sad. Plus a little bit of sad, you know, the touch of sad. Being, having people leave you will always be a little bit of sad. Like, I never felt like our friendship was ending. You know, for all of it, like I said earlier, like, your true friends are more than location-based. Just like your home. Like, you know, your true home is more than location-based. And so, if you always remember that, I think that you'll always have your home.
I think that's what does enable me to move. I believe my closest friendships can transcend time and space. But it's also a little sad to say goodbye. Next time on Unrooted, we're going to go on the road and move cross-country. We'll talk about home on the road, home wherever you are, people who open up their homes to you, and we're going to talk to someone who's lived on the road in many ways.
I get antsy. I really like the idea of nesting. I think I feel a lot better in motion.
This episode was hosted and produced by Julie Hotz, and almost all music was composed by myself as well. Except for Debussy's Clair de Lune, performed by Brent Hugh from the Free Music Archive, which is licensed under an Attribution, Non-Commercial, Share Alike 3.0 United States license. Follow the show on Instagram and Twitter at Unrooted Podcast. And check out this week's show notes to see a photo of Bonnie in the mountains with me, to see Paul and Bea in Australia, and to see me while packing. And right before I drove off in my overstuffed car. Thanks for listening.